This is the first in our special series of conference calls. We'll focus on business entity creation and selection, as well as record keeping and tax-related matters. It's important to remember that the information provided on this call is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional legal or financial advice. If your particular circumstances require additional information, please contact your attorney or other financial advisor. First thing I want to talk about pertains to the area of business entity creation. And I know sometimes we don't really think about what we're doing in terms of what kind of business we are or aren't, but it really does matter, and it especially matters when you're thinking about how and what you're going to be able to do with your taxes. And obviously I'm not going to be able to address all the different possibilities, but I'm going to hit at the ones that I know are most relevant to network marketing and to this industry overall. Now, most people in this country who are small business owners are what we call sole proprietors, and most of you on the phone are probably sole proprietors. A sole proprietor simply means that you're in business by yourself, you use your Social Security number for this business, and you aren't what we call a formal registered business entity. You're still a business, and the IRS still recognizes you as a sole proprietor, and that, in effect, is what most people are who own small businesses in this country. I'm going to tell you one of the things that makes that a problem as we go through this. A sole proprietor means that everything is yours, and therefore, when you think about liability, which is very difficult to think about, I understand that, but that really means that everything you have is at risk because you and your business are one. Okay, you're one entity. Some of the other types that people are using, and this is much more common these days, are what we call LLCs. I know you've heard those initials. What it stands for, though, is Limited Liability Company. Because when most people started their business, if they weren't going to be a sole proprietor, really their only other option was to be a corporation. And a lot of people didn't want to be a corporation, and as you'll find out during the rest of this call, a lot of people don't need to be a corporation. And unfortunately, many people are corporations, and it's causing them problems, and it's costing them money. So most states, all states now, as a matter of fact, created this entity called Limited Liability Company. The reason people went towards the corporation in was because of the liability protections, because obviously if you're building a business and something goes wrong, you don't want all your personal assets to be at risk, and the corporation provided that liability, because in the law, corporate law is a very well settled area, which means that there are lots and lots of cases that speak to the fact that the business owner is not necessarily going to be responsible for things that happen with the corporation. You can see that around you in the environment that we're in today, where you'll see corporations go bankrupt, and yet then you'll see these CEOs and others involved start up new businesses and just move on merrily along. That's one of the reasons for being involved in corporations. The other piece that some people have been involved in is what we call subchapter S corporations. Again, because corporations have so many different requirements, the creation of the subchapter S allowed people to have some of the benefits, the liability protections from the corporation without having all of the requirements. Now, when you think about these, they all play a different role. If you're totally comfortable with just being a sole proprietor, that's absolutely fine, and I am not telling you that you need to do something different. I'm just giving you enough information that you can do additional research and make some choices, all right? When you decide and you think about being a limited liability company, you can be what's called a single member limited liability company, which means it's only you. You own 100% of the interest. Or you can be a multi-member liability company. And that could be you and your spouse, you and a business associate could come together for those purposes. Now, here's the challenge. The primary benefit of everything except the sole proprietor is liability protection. Well, that is only on paper. The reality governs whether or not the IRS or anyone is going to actually give you that additional liability protection, okay? And this is what happens. All of these, the creation is very easy. In most states, you can go online, you can do this yourself, and you can create the documents to either be a limited liability company, to be a corporation, to be a subchapter S. You can do this all yourself. That's where the problem starts. Because it is so easy to do it, many people are doing it themselves. Some people are even going online and paying someone else. I have a client who paid someone $500 to do the creation piece, but it really wasn't worth the paper it was written on, because if you're going to be a legitimate business entity, limited liability company, corporation, subchapter S, partnership, any of those, it's the formalities that will get you. So I want you to think about this. The creation is easy, the formalities are hard, and the maintenance is harder. But you need to do each of these things appropriately if this is something you think you want to embrace. Now, why do you have to be so careful about this? Because remember when we started, the goal here is to minimize your liability. Well, if you create any of these documents, if you create the limited liability company, corporation, subchapter S, it looks like you have a business. What the IRS and the courts are looking at is, do you have a real business? Is your business totally separate from you so that if I came to you and talked with you, I would know that this is your business and this is you? If I looked at your records, would I know that this is you and this is your business? How would I know that? Well, if you are a limited liability company and I ask you to show me your operating agreement, you ought to know what I'm talking about. That tells me how you're going to operate your business. If you're a corporation, subchapter S or whatever, and I ask you to show me your bylaws, you need to be able to show me those. If you can't show me those, then I'm going to say you're not really a corporation. If you're any of these entities, I'm going to ask you to show me your annual minutes from your annual meeting. If you can't show me that, you've got a problem. I'm going to ask you to show me records of the loans you've taken that you say you've given to your business. If you can't show me the promissory notes, you've got a problem. If you loan money to your business and you're one of these entities, then you need to repay that money. You need to have a log. You need to show that you've paid interest. You need to make sure that you do with yourself what you would do with someone else if the business was totally separate. Now, that might seem confusing to you, but if you can remember this description. In the law, we have something when it comes to business entities that we call piercing the veil. So imagine, on one side of the room is you, personally. On the other side of the room is your business. In the middle is a curtain. If you, on your side, have your own personal checking account, and you have a business checking account on the other side of the curtain, and every business expense and every business activity is paid for from that checking account, then you can't pierce the veil. I don't get to come through the curtain. If you have one checking account, you put your commission checks in there, your money from your customers, you pay your rent from there, you go to the movies from there, you've done what we call commingling of funds. That is absolutely the worst thing you can do if you have your own business. And this applies whether or not you're a sole proprietor, a limited liability company, corporation, subchapter S, I don't care what you are. You need to have separate accounts. It's not that expensive as you might think. In many banks now, they have a basic free business checking account. You don't have to be making a lot of money yet. The goal here is to start protecting yourself so as you grow your wealth, you get to keep your wealth. That's the objective. So commingling of funds is a major red flag for the IRS, for the courts. And it also speaks to how you perceive mentally that you own a real business. Because when you deal with other businesses, don't they give you a business check? Of course they do. When you make your purchases, you need to be using a business credit card or business ATM debit card. It does a lot for your credibility, and it protects you in many legal senses, and it definitely protects you when the IRS knocks on your door for an audit. Now, how do you decide which one of these you should be? Think about first what you want to do with your business. In most states, you can go online and they'll have sort of a, is this the best one for you? But sole proprietor is if you just don't want to do anything. Limited liability company is if you do want to have the minimum liability protections for yourself. Now, I will tell you, though, that a single-member limited liability company is a red flag for the IRS, because what that tells them is, oh, this is just this one person. They probably don't have sufficient documentation. It's probably not current, and so it may make them more likely to look at you, but that's okay. I'm not saying don't do it. It may be very necessary for you to do it, and it may be appropriate. You just need to make sure that you cover all aspects of the legal requirements, what we call the corporate formalities, okay? Corporation, when you reach a certain level and you've got that much more exposure and you've got other people involved, that may be appropriate for you. Subchapter S is sometimes a program for people who want to have the business purchase their vehicles in some areas that can make it more manageable. But don't pick any of these without thinking. Creation is easy, formalities are hard, maintenance is harder. If you're not going to keep it up, you just as well stay a sole proprietor because you're going to be exposed. Someone, when something goes wrong, remember piercing the veil. Can they see through? If there's no distinction between you on your side of the curtain and the business on the other side of the curtain, then as far as the IRS and the courts are concerned, there's no business. Okay, that's the piece. So always connect the dots between what you're doing. Is it you or is it your business? And when I deal with you, I ought to be able to know. When you're mailing packages, are you mailing and paying for that with the business credit card or are you paying for that with your personal credit card? You really need to keep that separate. Now, in addition to having to have an operating agreement if you're a limited liability company, having to have bylaws, if you are one of the various corporation forms, you do have to have annual meetings. I know you're thinking, how in the world can I have an annual meeting with myself? Well, of course you can. You know how we talked on several of the calls about sitting down and thinking about where your business is going and brainstorming what you want to do? Well, that's what you're doing. You're forecasting what you want to have happen with your business, reviewing what happened the previous year, and then you're writing a summary, and that's going to be your minutes, okay? You need to have records. You need to keep your financial records separate. I'm very serious about those promissory notes, and I know many of you loan money to your business. Well, if it's for real and you're going to pay it back, you've got to document that, okay? Same respect if you borrow money from someone to help you with your business, you need to document that as well. Those are some of the critical elements for deciding what type of business you want to become. I don't expect you to become an expert at that just based on what I shared with you, but I want you to at least be thinking about it. This is a good time of the year to be thinking about it because if you aren't doing things the way you need to be doing, you can begin fresh with the new year. Now, some of you I know have multiple businesses, and you're thinking, well, do I have to have an LLC for this and an LLC for that? The reality is I think in every state now you can create a limited liability company and have a general purpose clause. And the general purpose means that you can do everything that's not illegal. And if you're in a state like that, and I really do think most of you are, then you could do multiple businesses under one LLC. Of course, that means extra record keeping. It may mean separate accounts that you have to have. There is an exception, though, one of the primary exceptions for multiple activities under one sort of umbrella LLC, and that's when you're involved in an area that's regulated, a professional area that's regulated. For example, my law office cannot be part of an LLC that I may have set up to take care of this marketing vehicle, okay, because that's attorneys are professionally regulated by the state. That one has to be separate. I'm not allowed to mix it. Some of you are nurse practitioners and medical providers, and most of those are regulated, and they can't be mixed. So if you're involved in something like that, then you have to get some additional information. But generally speaking, you can do a multi-purpose LLC and you'll be fine. All right? Now, when we think about what we're going to do with any of these entities, and it doesn't matter which one you are, the record-keeping piece is critical. You can use any system that you want to manage your records. You just have to have a system that you will use, right? A lot of people go out and you buy, you know, the money computer program, you buy QuickBooks, you buy TurboTax. You need to buy something that you will use. A lot of people set up their own database. You can do that because the goal is for you to know what you're spending it on, and what you're getting in. I always use TurboTax for our taxes because I like that program. It's easy. A lot of people use QuickBooks for their program. I don't like QuickBooks. Why? Because it's hard. You have to spend a lot of time on the front end getting that information in. And then you have to make sure that you maintain it, because if you get all the information in January and you don't go back and look at it until December when you're getting ready to file your taxes, you're going to have a problem. But if you have a monthly database that you will use, then that's what you have to use. Find something, buy one of the trial versions or download one of the trial versions. Almost all of them will let you do that. Play with it for a couple of weeks and see if that's something you want. And then if it's not, if you're not comfortable with it, then you don't have to pay for it, okay? That's what I would recommend, but it's got to be something you can use and that you will use. When you think about you're going to keep your records on something, you also have to consider how long are you going to keep these records and what type of records are you really going to keep? I know that's a big issue for a lot of people. Well, the general rule that accountants will give you and that most attorneys will give you is that you need to keep your supporting documentation records for at least 7 years. Now, the IRS and many of the publications, they say you only have to keep them for 3 years from the filing period. But think about this. The rule is 7 years, they can come back up to 7 years if they suspect fraud. However, if you never filed or you just grossly underreported, they can come back forever. So differentiate between when you decide what you're going to be comfortable with, whether it's the 3 year period or the 7 year period, make sure you differentiate between keeping the tax return and the supporting documentation. I tend to keep the tax returns because it shows me a history of where we've been, but not keep all the supporting documentation after I pass the 7 year point. Now, this is separate. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying throw everything away after 7 years, because many of you also, because you're LLCs or sole proprietors and your personal income taxes are working with your business ones, you've got other items on there perhaps related to your home purchase and home improvement, those type of tax issues that are related to an asset you need to keep so long as you have that asset. So don't think I'm saying get rid of those. This is why you really need to sit down and decide what's going to work for you, okay? And think about the importance of having these records. Remember, if we're self-employed, when you go looking for a loan, what do they want? They want 2 years profit and loss statements, or they want the last 2 years income tax returns. And so you need to be able to produce these documents. And if you're wanting to purchase a home and you need to show these documents, they need to be well organized, because that's all the lender has to support the income that you're saying that you've made, all right? So look after 3 years, the 7 years, see which one works for you. Remember that records connected to your assets really need to be maintained as long as you have that particular asset, all right? And when you think about just how you're going to keep these, I think the computer really is easier, but if you need to just kind of compile all your receipts together, run an adding machine tape and stick that on top of them and then transfer that over to a handwritten spreadsheet, that's fine. Whatever works for you. But I will tell you that it is much better for you to try to get into the habit, especially with January coming, of doing this on a monthly basis. Because many of the deductions that people miss, they miss because they don't have the records together. And who in the world in December wants to go through 12 months worth of paper? Most of us don't, and so we'll miss something. But if you do it monthly, just like get envelopes and put all receipts in this, invoices in this, so that you can at least run a monthly tab. It'll make it much easier for you as you go down the road. So when you think about the basic kind of documents you need to have, obviously for our customer sales, what do we need? We need to have receipts for those sales. The IRS is going to want that when you're talking about your gross sales, which we'll discuss when we get to the Schedule C. You have to have receipts in order to support the fact that you, in fact, had a customer and you received money from this customer. And I know that many of you do not give each of your customers receipts. But think about this. How many times do you go into a store and it says, if we don't give you your receipt, then your next meal is free? Yeah, I know that happens because that happens out here and offline. And what do? They always remember to give you that receipt because they don't want to give you something for free. You need to think about it like that. Business is business, and that's back to piercing the veil. Are there receipts to support this income that you're reporting? It's all about connecting the dots, all right? Lots of reasons for keeping your receipts. You need them to support your state sales tax. If you're in a state that has sales tax, you need them to support your Form 1000. I think many of you may not know that when you want to go for the Customer Manager of the Year, you need to turn your receipts into the company. That's how they're going to know that you've generated this amount of sales. So many people send in all their receipts with their Form 1000. You get to choose, but what I'm saying is you need to have receipts for your customers. How long do you need to keep them? That's the supporting documentation part of your record, so you need to keep them for that 3 year period if you decide on that, or for that 7 year period. Now, in terms of receipts for your business operation, this one is kind of challenging, especially in terms of the amount of receipts and invoices you can actually have, but the reality is you have to keep them. You know, a couple of you had questions about the fact that we can now track orders online, and therefore do you still need to keep your hard copies? I'll share this with you. I am totally, totally into the technology age, and I totally believe in the Internet. I also know from experience, because Robert and I were audited, that the IRS is not taking an online record. You have to have hard copies. And so if you don't have a copy of what's online, what are you going to do if online isn't available? not on purpose. It just happens. Things happen all the time with technology. You're going to need your hard copies. Now, what most people don't do that they need to do that will be very, very beneficial if you should get audited, and besides, it keeps, helps you keep your records in a more orderly fashion. Most of us, we place the order, we print that document, we receive the order, it has the invoice on it. Match your order to your invoice. It makes it much easier for you to do your year-end accountability when you do that. Another piece that causes people a problem, when you're doing your taxes, you need to separate out product purchases from sales aids. Remember, they're going to be two different areas on the tax forms, as we're going to go through those in a bit. But where possible, it's easier for you if you only order products on one order and sales aids on another order. If you can't do that, that's okay. I understand. But then when you get the invoices in, separate them. Make a copy. If your invoice has product and sales aid, make a copy of that one. Highlight the sales aids on one. Put that in your sales aid stack. And use the other one to support the product. Because if you're going to wind up, remember, thinking ahead, we're going to have a tally for sales aids to report to deduct, and we're going to have a tally for product. Well, what's going to be your supporting documentation? You don't want to have to go from one stack to the other to prove the that you have the supporting documentation for that. All right? And you're also going to have different invoices that may have your locator subscriptions on there. They all show your UFMS piece on there. So you want to keep these things as separate as you possibly can. I mean, it's going to take you a while. If you're totally not in the habit of doing this, then it's going to take you a little longer. But you can do it, and it's definitely going to cause you a lot less grief, especially if you need to support your claim to income and if you ever get audited by the IRS. Now, when you think about why I'm asking you to do this, it really is about knowing the details of your business, because that's how you know. How do you know if you're growing wealth? Just because you make a lot of money, that doesn't necessarily mean you're growing wealth if you're spending it all and not maximizing the deductions that you're able to have. So you think about some of the things that you get from the company. What do you need to keep? When you get your commission checks, you need to keep those. Why do you need to keep those? I know you spend the money as fast as you get it, but you need to keep that because you need to balance that with the 1099 that you receive at the end of the year. What if there's a mistake on the 1099 and it doesn't match what you've had? Well, I know you're not going to go back for an entire 12-month period to see if it matches, which is why I'm asking you to do it on a monthly basis. There are errors with 1099s, and you need to be able to recognize that. Again, when you take those checks and you deposit them into the bank, they need to be deposited into what account? Into your business account. I don't care if you're going to turn right around and write yourself a check out of that. You need to put them where they belong so that the dots are connected. This was a business check received. It goes in the business account. If you take it out and use it for other things, that's up to you. But keep the line clear as to where that money came from and where it's going. Okay? Now, many of you have banks now, most of us actually have banks where we don't receive our hard copy checks in the mail. That's not necessarily going to be a problem for you in terms of the records I'm asking you to keep, because most banks give you a photocopy of the checks. And the law has changed so that those photocopies are equivalent to an original. So that would be sufficient support unless the IRS wanted something else. But generally, that's going to work. But you need to know what your bank's policy is. Do you get photocopies? If they don't, are they available? Is it a nominal charge for that? What if you actually need the original? Is it available? How much does it cost? This is preventive. We need to know this information before we need this information. Okay? That's the biggest challenge for us to think about. So now we've gotten a little bit of information about the kind of businesses we are, and after thinking about the extent of the liability that you have, you probably don't even want to think about what records you need to keep, but it really is a process. You need to know first what you are, what kind of business are you. Two, what does that mean in terms of the records you need to keep? And then, how does that impact what I'm going to do with my taxes? All right? It's kind of it's a full circle, I think, and many times we aren't making that, we're not making the entire trip around there, and that's what I kind of want us to focus on. So before I go to the taxes, though, I want to stress one other piece about the liability, because there are ways for you to work around that. I mean, those of you who've been in the business for a little while, you may have MABA coverage, and that can be some insurance that helps you in terms of liability. But for those of you who do have experience with them, think about this. They also have requirements. You see, if you aren't doing certain things that they ask you to do, then their insurance isn't going to cover you. It's just like the situation right now with the disaster relief things going on. Insurance companies are saying we're not going to pay for flood damage, we're only going to pay for hurricane damage. Why? Because their contract called for a certain piece. They were not liable for this other piece. You can have MABA, you can have your own independent liability insurance, but I know every single insurance policy has requirements that you have to have met, which means you have to have been a real business, acting like a real business with real business documentation if you're going to claim a loss relative to a business, okay? So now let's look at the actual filing of taxes. And obviously I can't cover all of your situations because I'm not sure exactly where all of you are, but I do know that most of you are sole proprietors or LLCs. Generally, that means that you're going to be still filing the basic 1040 form, and you're going to attach your Schedule C to it. Now, corporations and multi-member LLCs will use different forms. A single-member LLC will still use the 1040. You have to be concerned, though, since we're self-employed, with a bit more than just that basic form. You have to think about using Schedule SE, which is the self-employment tax form, and you're thinking, well, I'm not paying any self-employment tax. Well, absolutely, you have to pay self-employment tax, or you're going to face huge penalties. And it's not that difficult to complete the form, but if you have net earnings from self-employment other than a church employee of $400 or more, you have to fill this form out. It doesn't mean that you have to pay self-employment tax, but you have to go through the process with this form to see if you're going to be required to pay that. And they give you a 50% deduction, so it's usually not much, but think about the self-employment tax as your input into your own Social Security. That's really what you're doing. Okay, you're paying based on your net profits, just as with a regular job, your employer is paying based on the amount that they give you. Okay, so you need to get familiar with that form, and that Schedule SE for self-employment tax. You also have to focus on estimated taxes, and this is where many of us have had challenges. If you are going to make, for 2004, if you expect to owe at least $1,000 in taxes for 2005, after you took out your withholding and all, then you needed to be completing the calculation sheet to see if you have to pay estimated taxes. That means that where your employer would be paying the taxes for you, now you're making your own money. There's no employer to pay the taxes. You have to look ahead, see how much I would owe, and then tell the IRS based on the calculations, and you do those calculations on a form that's called 1040EF, and it walks you right through the calculation. It includes the quarterly payment vouchers because you have to send this money on a quarterly basis to the IRS. Many, many people don't do this, and they get in major trouble in terms of the extraordinarily high penalties they have to pay when you do complete your return and you did, in fact, owe more than that required amount for that year. And for this year, it's more than $1,000 for 2005. If you owe that, you need to make sure you do the quarterly estimation. It really isn't that difficult. And if you're using a program like TurboTax or all, it walks you right through it, and it just prints out the forms and everything. And back to growing wealth. You want to keep what you can, and you don't want to pay what you don't have to pay. And penalties and additional interest and surcharges, that is absolutely equivalent to throwing your money out the sunroof. Robert used to call it sunroof money. That means that if you throw it out your sunroof, what is the likelihood of it coming back? Slim to none, right? So when you think about building towards wealth, think about eliminating those possibilities for losing the money that you work for. And not doing these taxes because you think it's a problem or you think it's a bother can impact you down the road far more than you can possibly imagine right now. Okay? So you've got the self-employment tax you're going to think about now and your estimated taxes on your 1040ES. You're also going to look into those. Now, since most people are going to file the Schedule C with the 1040, which, by the way, is another major red flag. In fact, it is the number one red flag for the IRS, a Schedule C with on your form. And the reason is because, again, it just kind of shows that you're a business. You're definitely a business, but the potential for something to be wrong is greater. Okay, multiple LLCs, corporations, partnerships, generally are going to be filing different forms. Most are going to file a Form 1065 with a Schedule K if that's applicable to you. They have pretty good instructions for getting through that. Most of your concern, though, is always with expenses on your taxes. most people who are going to follow the Schedule C, which is where we're going to place our emphasis, are going to be on a cash basis. When you're looking at the forms and it talks about cash basis versus accrual, for most of us, it's always going to be a cash basis, and that means that you generally deduct your expenses in the year that you pay them. Okay, you're going to pay something this year. When you file your taxes for 2005, you're going to deduct it. Generally also means that you have inventory. It doesn't have to be a lot of inventory, but you have some. And most of us have some inventory at the beginning of the year and inventory at the end of the year, and we do have to account for that. Now, when we walk through the various expenses and what you can put on your Schedule C, and for those who are using a Schedule K or the other ones, a lot of this will translate over. But the most important thing for you to think about is that the IRS definition for expenses really is simply what is ordinary and necessary. And we don't often want to think about that. We want to think, I can write off whatever I want to write off, but, you know, we're not the ones doing our own audit. And the reality is, I know most of us realize that that's not all that practical in the first place. Think about connecting the dots when you look at what is ordinary and necessary. The IRS considers it ordinary for the type of business that you're doing and necessary. Now, necessary doesn't mean indispensable, but it does mean needed. When you think about advertising, we're looking at the Schedule C now. When you go to this document, a lot of you have questions about advertising pieces. I just want you to think in terms of connecting the dots between what you spend and your business and being reasonable. I know there's multitudes of attorneys and CPAs and former IRS agents out there telling you that you can write off anything and everything, but not only were we audited, and I know what I'm talking about, I've been to so many seminars and I've been with so many clients who are facing civil and criminal penalties for being excessive in terms of what they decided to claim, that you need to connect those dots. You know what's reasonable as well as I know what's reasonable. When it comes to these expenses, think about how they really relate to your business. Advertising is a good example. We all know the basic ads. We know that we can have certain things in our home. We can have product displays. We use our various brochures, and some of us make flyers and those type of ventures. Now, some people have thought, well, if I use my product, every time I use that, I'm advertising. So here's the picture. We sell cosmetics, I wear lipstick, you say to me that lipstick looks really nice, I can't help it that you bought up the business, I tell you that I have a customized cosmetics store, do I get to write that lipstick off as advertising? The IRS says no. Okay, the IRS says flat out no. Do people do it? Yes. Do some people get away with it? Yes. Until they get audited and they can't substantiate it. So think in moderation. Because we take health and nutrition products and we are therefore healthy and people see that we're healthy, that doesn't connect the dots between your taking health and nutrition products. Think back, ordinary and necessary. It's necessary for you to take health and nutrition products for you to be healthy, but we're talking about necessary for your business. And you can't connect the dots between your taking of these health and nutrition products as an ordinary event, which it very well may be in your life, and necessary for your particular business, which it very well is not. Okay, think about that when you're talking about what you can put down on the advertising line. One of the other critical areas for most people, and this is in the, I'm focusing on the expenses section of the Schedule C, is in the area of car and automobile expenses. That one's pretty challenging, but it can be very simple if you just keep one thing in mind, log and document. You get to choose whether you want to go with actual cost of a vehicle or the mileage. Now, for most people, it tends to work out that mileage gives them more of a credit. Could be different in your particular situation, which is why it's always good to calculate both ways. But the key here is if you are going to claim this, you have to have a log. You can claim it without a log. If you're going to keep the deduction when you get audited, you have to have a log. And that log has to speak to your total mileage for the vehicle, and then the business mileage. Like Robert would always go out at the beginning of the year, mark down the mileage, and then he kept a log for everywhere he went, delivering to customers and all of the business activities. And then at the end of the year, he'd again check that mileage, and we would have no problem subtracting what was personal from that and moving forward with it. Now, some people want to claim 100%. I will tell you that the IRS generally will not accept 100%. There are occasions where you could have one car that you only use for business. But again, you're going to have to document it. And if you go into the IRS with 100% claim, you better have a really good log when they come to ask the question. I'm not saying that's not possible for you. I'm just saying that that log better match that every trip was business related. Okay. Now, if you're going to do the mileage, you don't have to do very much. Other than you still need a log, but you don't have to keep all the other receipts for car maintenance and upkeep, because the IRS gives you every year what the mileage is going to be. For this year, you get to claim 40.5 cents a mile from January the 1st through August 31st. And then because of the spike in the gas prices, they went to a higher rate of 48.5 cents from September the 1st through December 31st. You see? So you need to know that. And you'll know that when you get your tax booklets, that information will be in there. But that's what you need to think about in terms of what you're going to be claiming. Now, when you look at the Schedule C on the back side, it asks you very clearly for the business miles, the commuting miles, and other miles. And do you or your spouse have another vehicle available for personal use? And where I've had a client get in serious trouble here is they only had one vehicle, yet they claimed the entire vehicle 100% used for business. Well, you know the IRS was not going to buy that, and they didn't, and now they're paying really excessive penalties. That's why they have these questions there. And one of the other questions, do you have evidence to support your deduction? If yes, is the evidence written? You see, you don't have to have, this is the problem, I think, with the system. You don't have to have the supporting documentation when you sit there and fill out your taxes and turn it in and collect your refund and spend all the money. But think about how difficult it's going to be to create this documentation when you get a 10-day notice for an audit. You're not going to be able to do it. Believe me, I know you're not going to be able to do it. I am serious about documentation, and it took me some effort to make sure that I had all of ours together when we went through our audit. So build this documentation as you're going. I'm not asking you to recreate for this year, but I am asking you to focus on these things for next year. We covered the advertising piece, keep copies of your ads, and what you did for the billing. Most of you keep a copy of the newspaper, but you don't keep a copy of what you paid for it. You need that in your advertising stack so that you can easily get to it when it comes time to complete your own taxes. Same thing for your mileage log. Keep it in the car. Write it down. Now you can put it in your palm pile and put it in your Trio. Then transfer it to your computer and print it out. To keep that in your automobile expenses folder or envelope, however you're going to do it. I find that different envelopes for each thing really work. You don't even have to buy the envelopes. Get those envelopes from the post office, and you can use each of those. Office expenses, that's another real challenge for people. You need to really be clear on what is an office expense and what isn't. Okay? Now, you think about, several of you had questions about the telephones. This is still a challenge for many people, but the basic IRS rule is that the first phone in your house is not your business phone, and you don't get to deduct the full cost on that phone. That's your private, your family phone. The second line can be your business line. If you only have one phone, then you can deduct the expenses for long-distance calls, and if there's a way for you to totally isolate your business lines, but the basic phone line expense, you can't do that. If for those of you who have high-speed internet access and cell phones that are part business and part personal, right now the IRS has not been totally definitive in saying you can't, but if you do want to claim a percentage, you have to have detailed records to support it. It's easy enough to do that with a cell phone because you can get a printout and you can see if most of those calls were business-related. It's much more challenging to do with your high-speed internet access, so that's something that, like I said, they're not totally definitive on, but you need to know if you can't really produce a track record for using the internet as part of your business, you're going to have a hard time charging off $50 a month for high-speed internet access because you happen to check on franchise.com once a week. Okay, it's not going to work very well for you. So when you think about that, I guess the thing I really want you to focus the most on in terms of all your expenses is the IRS is looking at whether or not you're spending real money. Okay, is it real money that's ordinary and necessary for your business? You've got to spend real money for advertising. That means real ads. You've got to take real trips in that car for business purposes, taking products to the post office, meeting with clients, going to product shows, things that are directly related to your business, office expenses, your phone that you use to call your clients, the phone that you use to work with your distributors. Connect the dots. If that's the case, then you can provide the documentation to support it. Meals is another big one. The IRS is really critical on this, ordinary and necessary. if you, and I know when we go to convention and leadership, sometimes people are fighting over who's going to get the check. You need to be real careful about that because you think you're going to write it off. First of all, I don't really like that whole write-off mentality because we're talking about growing wealth, and you have to spend money first in order to write it off. And I don't want you spending a dollar to make a quarter, okay? If you're talking in the meal category, if it's more than $25, then you can't just have a receipt. You have to have documentation, even writing on the back of the receipt, the purpose of that meal and who was there. More than $25, they can require the purpose of the meal and who was there. Much easier to do when you're traveling. When you're taking your family out to eat, and many people work with their spouses, and you're taking your family member, you're having dinner, then the IRS doesn't just want a general purpose. You have to show a special purpose for that meal. Why did you have to go out to have this meal to speak with a family member? Related parties always cause difficulty with the IRS. Doesn't mean you can't do it. Just make sure that you document that that family member is involved, and here's the key, working the business on a regular basis. Otherwise, that's another IRS red flag. Okay, so you want to be sure that you do that. Now, for some of you who are just starting your business, one of the expenses you get to claim is startup costs. And you can claim up to $5,000 generally in startup costs for your business if you started your business after October 22nd, 2004, and that's a lot of the new people did that. Other expenses on the Schedule C, professional services. You hire a CPA, you have to go to an attorney perhaps to get your business entity created. Several of you had questions about CPAs. I talked to the CPAs that I know, and most don't take retainers. Most really focus on value billing and many are getting away from a flat hourly rate. What I would ask you to do when you're looking at hiring a CPA, if you choose to go that way, is talk to them and look for one that works with small businesses. You don't want to be a small business and go to a major like Ernst & Young to do your tax return because they'll charge $5,000. You want to find a small business CPA who will generally charge you somewhere between $250 and $750, okay? So that's kind of a range from the CPAs I talked to of what you could expect as you're going around looking for someone, and you want to interview them, make sure they have small business experience. Some of you also on the form want to talk about claiming home office deductions. You definitely are entitled to a home office deduction if it's appropriate for you, but you need to make sure that the IRS definition is separate and exclusive for business use and regular business use. Now, it doesn't mean totally exclusive, but it means pretty close. It doesn't mean what you see on HGTV where it's combination guest room, toddler room, and business office. It's not going to work. When we had the fire in our house a couple years ago, and the adjuster came and he walked upstairs, so we have one office, the sales office is upstairs and another office is downstairs, and the first thing he said was, we can't cover this office because it's not part of the home, and I said, well, we have separate insurance for that because it's clearly an office. You see, when the IRS thinks about an office, can they look at it at a glance and know this is an office? If they can't, you might have some issues, all right? So we've covered your advertising expenses, your car and truck expenses. I'm not going to focus on depreciation on this call. If you have questions about that, I can help you with that later. Insurance is deductible. That can be your MABA charge. It could also be your partial auto, depending on the percentage of time you claim to use your automobile. Interest is applicable if you made loans to your business or if you borrowed that money. Legal and professional services, CPAs and attorneys is applicable. Office expense is pretty standard. Pensions and profit sharing, that can be an issue because if you're, again, we're self-employed, we need to be thinking as you build your wealth about setting up your own retirement plans. The self-employed plans are available for you, and we'll cover some of that in January's call, but those are available, and those premiums and various pieces of those deductions would be deductible for you. Supplies, of course, is on there. Taxes and licenses, your sales tax license, your business license costs. Some states you have to pay a property tax on business inventory. Those things would be deductible under taxes and license. Meals we spoke about briefly. Remember, you don't get to deduct 100% of the meals. It's usually a 50% limit. Remembering the purpose in ordinary and necessary. Travel, that means you have to keep a copy of those tickets. You go to convention, you need to keep the brochure. Something to support, this is where you were. In the other expenses category, I like to focus on giving the IRS as much information on the first go-round as you can, okay? You want to eliminate their questions. So when you look at the front of your Schedule C or your equivalent form, and you can put all these numbers in here, if these numbers are high, you need to do some explaining. And I like to go to the back of the Schedule C in Part 5, Other Expenses, and that's where you can explain them instead of putting them on the front section. Because you have to put down things like your renewal, Business Development Center renewal costs, okay, your USNS services package, you take the monthly amount, multiply it by 12, put that down there. If you have a web center, your web center hosting fee, if you have a website, the cost for that, your internet service provider, your cost for that, professional education and training, that's your tickets to leadership school and convention and regionals and locals. Your sales aids, that's your literature, your brochures, your audio tapes. That's why I want you to keep those things separate on your invoices. Shipping costs, U.S. Postal. Separate U.S. Postal from FedEx, from UPS. Why? Because you want them to not think, wow, this person spent $1,000 on postal. You want them to know $300 with the post office, $300 with UPS, so that it makes more sense, you see? Because you'll see when we get to the end, which I better get to quickly, the biggest red flag for the IRS, short of a Schedule C, is revenue versus income. You don't want to have, revenue versus expenses. You don't want to have $10,000 in revenue and $15,000 in expenses. You want to be able to explain high expenses and not just lump them together. So you want to use the back of this form to indicate that in these other expenses area. That could be your product display that you have in your home. The value of that can be listed as one of your expenses, okay? That's the kind of information that you really have to think about because that's what's going to matter. Some of you purchase marketing leads. If you do that, that's another expense that can go on the back. Now, when you're looking on the back of the form of the Schedule C, and this is going to be on the other forms as well, when you have to monitor that inventory, this is where documentation is critical. You get to know January the 1st what you have. Go through your inventory, add it up, keep a log. Because you have to know where you start in order to know where you end, and you have to account for your purchases less the cost of items withdrawn for personal use. How do you keep your personal use items? We always kept a monthly log, and when we go into the office to take something out, we just mark it off so that you know each month I used a bottle of OPC, a bottle of B12, one VitaShield, whatever you use, because you have to subtract that on your tax report. You don't get to just log it all in together. And for some of you, you're in states where you have to pay a sales tax on your personal use items, and I know many of you don't, but think about it. You've purchased that product. That's the same as a sale to yourself. That's what the state considers. So the state isn't going to ever look to the company for that additional sales tax. They're going to look to you. You get to decide, of course, what you're going to do. But at a minimum, for the purposes of filing your taxes, you have to account and separate your personal use products from your overall inventory. And the best way to do that that I know of is with a monthly log. Okay? Now, sometimes there's just more general questions that we need to think about and some of you are concerned about. A lot of you have independent contractors for your web center and website sales, and you have to give these people 1099s at the end of the year. I will tell you that most independent contractors don't want 1099s because they don't want to have to account for the money that they receive, but you absolutely have to give them one. It's not your responsibility what they do with it. It's your responsibility to give them one. Just as the company gives us a 1099 if we make more than $600, you have to give someone a 1099 if they make more than $600. You account for that on your Schedule C, and you can complete these forms on the computer. You can buy the blank forms from Office Max, Office Depot, Sam's Club, any of those office supply places have that. And when it comes to whether or not these people think they are working for you or they truly are independent contractors, the IRS looks only at control. How much control do you have over what this person is doing? If I tell you I need you to get from A to Z and you figure out how to get there, then it's going to be likely that you're an independent contractor. If I tell you I want you to get from A to Z, and then I tell you first I want you to go to B and do this, and then go to C, and then go to D, and then go to E, and then stop at F, and then move up to G, then you're going to be an employee. So you need to be real careful about how you're interacting, not just with the web center people, but perhaps you have an administrative assistant or someone working with you. So really think about that, okay? A lot of you also are concerned about what you can do with these independent contractors. They can always become a distributor if they choose. Your basic sales reps can become distributors, of course. Your web center sales reps can become distributors. Some of you live in areas where you have undocumented people who wish to become involved. I will tell you that without a Social Security number or an employer identification number, it's not going to happen. The company absolutely requires that. We had some contacts in Hawaii who wanted to become part of the business, but for a variety of reasons, they didn't have Social Security numbers, and they weren't willing to get them, and the company simply cannot and will not work around that. But that does remind me, when you are creating your business entity, whatever one you're going to decide to be, you need to make sure, if you're not going to be a sole proprietor, that you have a tax ID number. That's your employer identification number, also known as a tax ID number. And that is the number. This is really going to be key to not letting someone pierce the veil, because your business checking accounts are going to have the tax ID number. Your EIN is going to be their number, where your personal one is going to be under your Social Security number. And that's going to be the first indicator that there is a separation between me and my business. Okay? So think about that when you're putting these things together. Now, I talked earlier about the IRS audit being the red flag. Number one is the Schedule C with the 1040, room to question and history of poor documentation. In terms of audits, they are so concerned about revenue versus expenses. Don't fear an audit, just be prepared for an audit. I wasn't scared when we were audited. I was aggravated because it was happening at a time I didn't feel like being bothered. But you want your focus on your taxes to be balanced. Balance is the key. You want to present as a real business. If you, in fact, are doing your business and you're never making any money, the IRS really is going to consider 3 out of 5 years without a profit that you have a hobby and that it's not a real business. Okay? In terms of auditing, also, the IRS is just now adding random audits for subchapter S corporations. They usually don't audit them at all unless there's something wrong with that individual's personal income tax return, but they're going to do 5,000 random audits from the years 2003 and 2004 for subchapter S people. So if that's you, I'd spend some time going back and making sure I have my documentation in order. In fact, the IRS got an article out of Money Magazine that says IRS audits are going to increase 20%. Okay, they're going to really step it up this year, and they're going to look, obviously, at high-income individuals, salaries more than $100,000. They're going to look at 1 in 63 of the high-income individuals, but they're also going to focus on small businesses, because small businesses is just an easy approach because most of us don't do what we're supposed to do. I really want to stress that you avoid the write-off mentality. You have to spend the money first, okay? The goal here is to help you build wealth, not to just give it away indiscriminately. When you think about how in the world are you going to get access to all this information I just talked about, you can go to irs.gov. They have a lot of publications that you can read. Obviously, they're written for their benefit, so you'll possibly have questions about them, and I'm more than happy to answer them. But the basic ones you could look at, publication 334 is the tax guide for small business. 533 is self-employment tax. 535 is business expenses. Publication 583 is starting a business and keeping records, and that might give you some ideas of what to look for, and that's irs.gov. What I really want you to get from this call is that even though it seems like there's a lot of information, you can streamline it. You can develop the organizational skills to protect yourself and protect the effort that you've put into your business. So whether you're focused on the business entity piece, what you ought to be, the record keeping, how you ought to do it, how you ought to focus on the taxes that you file and the forms that you use, look at this information yourself. Think about what I shared with you this evening, and please feel free to ask me questions. You can send me the email. I'm really glad that you're interested in this, because securing your financial future is absolutely the first step to ever being in a position to build and grow wealth, which is absolutely necessary if we're going to take care of our communities and take care of this world the way that we say we want to do. And I believe most of you really want to do that. So I appreciate you sharing this evening with me, and feel free to send me any questions that you might have. And, of course, you can call me if it's something that in particular that you need to talk about. But generally, I can schedule the call better if you send me the email through the group website. Again, www.allianceofachievers.com. Take care.